Within the past 2 weeks, while driving in Castro Valley and Hayward, I encountered the following. On the way to church, I drove by a truck with a bumper sticker that read, "Truth, Not Tolerance," and the T was in the shape of a cross. One was left to ponder who or what this man was not tolerant of, but I had some reasonable guesses. Then when driving by Safeway on the way to pick up my daughter from school, I drove by a man holding up a large, bright, bold sign that read, "Repent, God hates sin, drunks, homosexuals, and a few other things." The sign also carried instructions to fall on your knees before God and beg for forgiveness. There was clearly no guessing about who or what should not be tolerated in this instance. Finally, on my way home from church, I passed by a Planned Parenthood center, as I often do, and I saw signs that read, "Abortion stops a beating heart," and another that read, "Women do regret abortions." After these experiences, I was left to reflect on the differences between these very visible religious elements within our own community and the core beliefs of our church and what we stand for. I also thought about the very different signs that we carried at Martin Luther King Jr. March this past month, those promoting tolerance and inclusiveness. Reflecting on why I give also allowed me to reflect on my own religious spiritual journey. I grew up here in the Bay Area in the Christian faith, in a church community with conservative Christian values. However, at the end of my freshman year in high school, I realized that I had begun to question my faith and my relationship with God. One pivotal moment for me was in the summer following my freshman year. I was going to attend a houseboat trip with the church youth group, and while I was fully aware of the changes that were taking place within me, I was at the same time looking to reconnect with God and to resurrect my relationship with him. Well, the miracle that I was looking for in the closer connection with Christ was not realized. I soon ended my personal relationship with God and gradually distanced myself from much of what I had been raised to believe. I listened to the R.E.M. song at the time, "Losing My Religion," and it seemed to encapsulate what was going on in my life at the age of 15. The whole experience was actually quite liberating. What was a loss at this time turned out in the long run to be a tremendous gain. While I'm not a big reader, I did find myself enjoying the existential writings of Camus, Emerson, and Thoreau. The underlying messages in these books resonated with me. I, too, was going to live life to the fullest. Planning and doing are two different things, so I make sure that I did. It was not like I was living without fear, but I was certainly not consumed by it. I lived deeply, and I tried to suck the marrow out of life. In this stage of my life, I believed myself to be an atheist. In time in my spiritual journey, I grew to realize that I was still capable of experiencing the divine. I began to enjoy being close to nature, the ocean, and sunsets. I love the ocean water, the beauty and the power of it. I'm in awe of Mother Nature. Surfing next to dolphins who are jumping in a synchronized fashion just feet away from me, hearing their joyous clicking and whistling, staring into the Grand Canyon, these experiences were divine. What Joyce Kinnear shared with the church 2 weeks ago about her upbringing struck a chord with me and in many ways reminded me of my upbringing. I, too, over time, have developed my own version of spirituality that draws from both my Christian upbringing but merges with other world religions and the quest for understanding gained through science and progress. I have held on to some Christian beliefs. I like to think that the last shall be first and the first shall be last. Where the destination is leaving, I don't know. But it does seem reasonable to me that the needy should get their day in the sun, particularly since in history and today, wealth and privilege are often concentrated in the hands of a select few. I also remember learning how Jesus was a man of the people who loved those around him despite their flaws or shortcomings. In short, I appreciate and remember those stories of Jesus and his compassion for his fellow man. I choose not to do an exhaustive investigation of what God hates, and I particularly won't remind others of what that may be. As Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that." Another thing I've come to believe is that subjective reality trumps actual reality any day. But I continue to be amazed by those in so many arenas and on so many levels who are convinced that they understand what the truth is, what is right for them and for all others that they may encounter. While not attending church during high school or my college years, I decided to visit a church with a friend who would later be my minister at my wedding. While the message I heard that day didn't particularly resonate with me, I realized I missed something about church. As I sat there in the pew, I scribbled notes over the church order of service, and when I ran out of room, I grabbed the paper, tithe envelopes, and began to write on these. I was fully engaged in a free flow of ideas and a bit of a writing frenzy. I did miss church. I missed the reflection, the discussion of ethics and morality. I had another memorable visit to church after that one. Lou and I visited the Presbyterian church at which I grew up. 2 years ago, over 94% of the church membership voted to no longer maintain their status as Presbyterian. Primary reasons that I heard were that they didn't support the new, more progressive and, relatively speaking, inclusive policies towards ordaining gay and lesbian ministers. Going back to these churches truly allows me to appreciate what we have here. My family and I have appreciated the people we have met here, the warm reception across the generations, the incredibly insightful messages of Katie, previous intern minister, Sharon, and Roy. I like Roy's youthful enthusiasm and his ear-to-ear smile that he frequently flashes. Also hearing from other fascinating guest speakers and members of our own church community. The members of the congregation have truly gone out of their way to embrace our family. Darcy's energy and passion for the RE program that serves Emma Maya and the other youth at our church is a blessing. I feel connected and part of something bigger than us that is advocating for a more positive, inclusive, and compassionate world. Before visiting this church, I researched online and read that Reverend Katie described herself as a hopeful agnostic, hopefully agnostic. I cherished, that's cool, I thought. I'm an agnostic, and why not be a hopeful one? I cherish the seven principles, and I love the fact that principle number one is respect the inherent worth and dignity of every person. If I was going to carry a sign, I'd like to have that written on it. It can be big and bright and huge with a big heart in the background. Lou and I were raised in the beautiful state of California in very different locations under different circumstances, but I appreciate her sharing her experiences and what she gained through her upbringing. While we came from different backgrounds, what brought us together was our shared connections, our taste in music, laughing about a Spanish song that we both enjoyed and one that I mistakenly thought was about a quesadilla. Yes, the laughter. And when we go to the desert to visit Lou's family, the sunsets that take over the skyline are divine. I am quite certain that if I hadn't met her, I wouldn't have witnessed the sunsets over El Centro. But my wife has a genuine and fulfilling belief in a relationship with God. Despite our different beliefs and backgrounds, we both embrace this church as our own home. It's nice to be in a church that embraces diversity and change and sees the value and strength in that. In short, this church challenges me to be a better person. Growing up, I knew that the Bible instructed us to tithe 10%. Well, it's nice I'm now a part of a church where we are entrusted to make a decision on our own to support our church that does so much to promote compassion, justice, community, environmental sustainability, and a commitment to making this world a better place.
I was on a road trip with my daughter, a three-hour trip that would take her back up to college, and the first time for her moving into a shared apartment with its own off-campus, miscellany, grungified kitchen. Maybe I should just, this kitchen, when we got there, her roommates had already lived there for the year prior. And when we arrived, we needed to call the cleaning service to have it taken care of before she moved in. So I had given my daughter a little book by Michael Pollan, Food Rules. Pollan is author of The Omnivore's Dilemma, the dilemma being helping us figure out what's for dinner in this world of modern food preservation and transportation technologies. But Food Rules is simple. This little book offers 64 concise rules in defense of food. The basic rule is eat food, mostly plants, not too much. And to explain that a little more, Michael Pollan says, apples are food, Twinkies are not. Luckily, some company is helping us out with the Twinkie part, so we won't have to worry about that too much longer. Although, did I hear that somebody's taking over the Twinkies? Oh, okay. Then maybe I better repeat. Apples are food, Twinkies are not. Well, anyway, reading the book together was fun. There was a new rule on every page, and we were a captive audience in the car, so we just kept on reading as we drove. We'd make our own personal comments on what it was that we had just read as we drove along the long, straight highways lined with active farmlands. We passed rice fields and grapevines and alfalfa and walnut and almond orchards and miles of corn. Not only did our text fit the landscape, it seemed wise study for someone who would have had to be deciding on her own, this is my daughter, whether to purchase top ramen or spinach. It was the summer of 2010. And here at Star King Church, we had been working diligently on completing the work to become an official green sanctuary, a status that we achieved that fall with the contributions of so many of our members. We worked hard. We looked at the ways we could make this place and ourselves more aligned with our values of environmental justice and marginalized people. This certification is in keeping with our affirmation of the interdependent web of existence. Our green sanctuary work leads us in our attention to what it is we take in as sustenance, that what we feed ourselves is as much a part of our theology as what it is that we give to the world. It was apropos to be doing this work that we were doing here for Green Sanctuary, since the study action issue chosen for the focus between the years of 2008 and 2012 was ethical eating, food, and environmental justice. We were paying more attention to the earth, to water justice, considering the activism that we were taking part in Sacramento and visiting communities all along California that were struggling to actually receive the human right to water, which actually we did pass. We were taking greater care to consider healthy food choices for our potlucks here and to consider inequities in our local communities. One of the most essential programs of our South Hayward Parish has been and continues to be the emergency food program, which feeds hundreds of families every week, its numbers increasing each time food is distributed. For me, connections are made slowly. Sometimes, like the radishes, they grow underground. In my own family, we had been making a subtle shift, beginning to leave behind our stops through the fast food drive-throughs. And yes, we began to cut them out, but still we had to go to Jack in the Box for the tacos. You know, we were still doing that. I was taking the effort to make healthier choices for my family and myself. Rule one, says Pollen, eat mostly plants, especially leaves. I thought that sounded like a good idea. Number two, eat animals that themselves have eaten well. Okay, I get that. Number three, eat your colors. So pay attention to the food on your plate and choose colorful food. In blessing, we are prompted to take care of ourselves as bodies, for we are a good gift. It is made clear in this tradition that there is, and I'm quoting from the UU Pocket Guide, there is no creed of belief to which you must subscribe to be a Unitarian Universalist, no statement of doctrine. Unitarian Universalists value the individual spiritual journey and believe that there is no one right way to lead a religious life. For us, religion is ultimately not about what you think. Religion is about how you live. Ours is a faith of deeds, not creeds. It is through this freedom of conscience that we undertake the items of our study and action. Like David spoke of earlier, No one is told what it is that we will think or even what we will study. We vote on that and then decide and do that study and work together. The statement of conscience was then approved after doing that work and bringing it back together. It was approved by the delegation of the General Assembly, and it was grounded in our diverse faith. And I will read from that statement. Minimally processed plant-based diets are healthier diets. Some of us believe that it is ethical only to eat plants, while others of us believe that it is ethical to eat both plants and animals. We do not call here for a single dietary approach. We encourage a knowledgeable choice of food based on understanding the demands of feeding a growing world population, the health effects of particular foods, and the consequences of production, worker treatment, and transportation methods. And then later in the statement, it says this: classism, racism, sexism, and other forms of oppression are deeply connected to economic justice, which is a prime determinant of access to food. Some of us will not be able to pay more for ethical food. It is through food that we come together in the creation of beloved community. We share food together each and every time we gather. It is deeply and spiritually relational. We cook for each other with love and care. The pie is baked here often to serve us for coffee hour on Sundays. The meals delivered at the door of the homebound, the preserves and chutneys packaged up in beautiful jars with tightly lidded tops, labeled with simplicity, these express our sincere devotion. Days before my sabbatical's very first days last year, a year and maybe about a year and a quarter ago, I sat with my son, Parker, to watch a documentary that examines how a plant-based diet can reverse many degenerative diseases. Now, I was genetically predisposed to high cholesterol, and my husband has had two open heart surgeries. He has an artificial heart valve, so he's on lots of medication. Well, my son and I were sitting there, and my husband walked by, and actually we said, "Join us, join us." He said, "No, I don't need to know that stuff." So we didn't pay any attention. We kept watching, and all of a sudden he came back in the room and joined us for the second half of the film. And then as soon as the credits were rolling, he said, "Let's do this." And my son stuck out his arm as a challenge, as if we were going to play this game together. And we all put in our arms and we decided we'd take this challenge together. And yet, I feared the large task because I am the cook in the family. But I was just going to be beginning my sabbatical. And so I cleaned out my pantry and my refrigerator all the way through. And I bought a couple cookbooks and I posted on Facebook, "Help!" And everybody said, "You go, girl." And we were on our way. For me, it made utter sense. I was offering a healthier diet for my family. I was making more ethical choices in keeping with my own conscience. We now have a farm box delivered at home, and I figured out how to cook the vegetables that I had to read on the paper to even find out what they were and that I hadn't had the courage to even tackle before. It's fun because now I have this photo-taking practice, right, that I take a photo every day. So I take pictures of my vegetables because, like, ooh, look at this weird thing. Each of us needs to decide for ourselves, however, what makes sense if we make changes in our eating habits or in organizing. Maybe we make changes in our eating habits, or maybe we organize for grocery stores in low-income neighborhoods, or in helping to bring more fresh produce for the South Hayward Parish Emergency Food Program, or in advocating for healthier food choices at schools, or in supporting legislation for labeling GMOs, or in pressing food sellers to require that their suppliers certify the humane treatment of animals, or in checking the assumptions that we hold without examination. I am committed to evolve in my own choices and to be respectfully honest with you. That as I express my own spirituality, I hope to then welcome others to share their values and the choices that they make as a result. How do we set a welcome table that respects our varied selves? We will undoubtedly make a variety of individual decisions. I love the imaginative author Bryant Terry. Do you know who he is? Some do, some don't. I invite you to look him up. He's a chef activist, a chef activist. Yes, he is. He is a transplant to the East Bay, originally from Memphis by way of Brooklyn. So he was born and grew up in Memphis, then he lived in Brooklyn, but guess where he lives now? He lives in the East Bay. Terry asks the questions. This is how he decides. He says, what kind of world do I want to see? How do I want animals and the environment to be treated? His answers then determine what he passes up. Terry speaks about the gratitude that he experienced when first moving to the Lake Merritt area for the easy access that he had to a plethora of healthy food options. Blocks from his apartment, he says, was an independently owned health food store with well-stocked organic food. And then even within walking distance was a 40,000 square foot Whole Foods market. On Saturdays, of course, the Grand Lake Farmers Market, which hosted 40 local farmers and 30 specialty food purveyors and a handful of local artisans. Bryant Terry calls this a food paradise, which makes it unfathomable to realize how there could be a food desert only a mile and a half away in West Oakland, where in the year 2007 was home to 53 liquor stores and not one grocery store. And think now, most of the people who live in West Oakland do not have access to a car, so they would then rely on the liquor store / convenience store to meet their grocery needs. Now imagine the fresh produce that's available there. Bryant Terry's belief that because people are detached from having pleasurable meals around the table, that empowering them to cook at home and share meals with family and friends can actually be a revolutionary first step toward food justice. The artistry and beauty of his philosophy of cooking and eating motivates me to do likewise. Bryant Terry describes what might be a Sunday afternoon snack. And I'm going to quote him. While a slice of rustic bread supports the vegetables on this open-faced sandwich, grilled eggplant is the real foundation. Grilled eggplant has a sweet, smoky flavor and would be delicious eaten alone. But I layer tangy, sweet grilled onions and ripe, seasonal heirloom tomatoes into the mix to add beautiful colors and additional flavors that meld well with the buttery eggplant. Right before serving, the sandwich is brightened with creamy celeriac sauce. That's a wonderful dressing that has lemon and Dijon and garlic and agave and parsley and tofu. Sorry. I know what you're thinking. Why is she up there preaching without bringing Bryant Terry and snacks? So many years ago, Martin Luther King Jr. called on our responsibility to be food activists. Before you finish your breakfast this morning, He said, "You'll have relied on half the world." Shall we then consider how our food choices impact the lives of those with whom we are bound together, about our own good gifts? Shall we consider how the earth is tended or harmed, and the creatures that share this planet with us? How shall they be judged? Let us begin to ask the questions, to be just as mindful with our food as we are with other forms of justice. Let us be grateful for the steps that we have already taken and reflect on where we still may go. I am in agreement with Renee and with the poet Marge Piercy, who pulls the tarot card, the Seven of Pentacles. That's the one, if you're familiar with tarot, that its meaning is about return on investments. That's what the meaning of the Seven of Pentacles, and that's the title of her poem. And it goes like this. Under a sky the color of pea soup, she is looking at her work growing away there actively, thickly like grapevines or pole beans, as things grow in the real world slowly enough. If you tend them properly, if you mulch, if you water, if you provide birds that eat insects a home and winter food, if the sun shines and you pick off the caterpillars, if the praying mantis comes and the ladybugs and the bees, then the plants flourish, but at their own internal clock. Connections are made slowly. Sometimes they grow underground. You cannot always tell by looking what is happening. More than half the tree is spread out in the soil underneath your feet. Penetrate quietly as the earthworm that blows no trumpet. Fight persistently as the creeper that brings down the tree. Spread like the squash plant that overruns the garden. Grow and gnaw in the dark and use the sun to make sugar. Weave real connections, create real nodes, build real houses. Live a life you can endure. Make love that is loving. Keep tangling and interweaving and taking more in, a thicket and bramble wilderness to the outside, but to us, interconnected with rabbit runs and burrows and lairs. Live as if you liked yourself, and it may happen. Reach out, keep reaching out, keep bringing in. This is how we are going to live for a long time. Not always. For every gardener knows that after the digging, after the planting, after the long season of tending and growth, the harvest comes. I invite you into deeper discovery as you make your own decisions about responsible food choices. Applaud the thought-out choices you have made. It is sacred work to continue to pay attention to how our choices affect our lives, the lives of our neighbors, the lives of animals, the health of the planet, how all these connections are made slowly. May it be so. Blessed be, and amen.